Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. Today is Monday, May 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Somalia plans to introduce direct universal suffrage with the local elections set for June 2024.
That is the law, and I would have preferred that we have a kind of improvement on our electoral system and the judiciary by extension. The person who is declared as the winner has to be sworn in before any other, pending the outcome of the Supreme Court.
The winner of the Nigeria's presidential election, Ahmed Bola Tinubu, will be inaugurated today as the 16th president of the country.
He says often when people are exposed to violence, it is like being exposed to a virus. They do not realize that all of the trials they go through, acute conflicts, will affect them psychologically.
And several young musicians, actors, and entertainers volunteer to help thousands of people displaced by war in the DRC. Those two and more, plus sports with Samson O'Malley, coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ahmed Bola Tinubu, the winner of the country's presidential election, will be inaugurated today as the 16th president of Nigeria. Some Nigerians say the country's constitution did not stop the inauguration, despite cases still pending before the election tribunal challenging the outcome of the vote. Others want the new president to hit the ground running by tackling some challenges facing Nigeria, like insecurity and the troubled healthcare and energy sectors, which include the repair of four refineries. Here is what some people told reporter Mike Mbonyi about the inauguration of a new president and the expectations of his administration.
My name is Augustine Okoli. I'm a civil servant.
Do you think the inauguration will hold or not on May 29th?
Of course, the inauguration we hold, that is the law. That is the law, and I would have preferred that we have a kind of improvement on our electoral system and the judiciary by extension. But then, that is the law. The person who is declared as the winner has to be sworn in before any other, pending the outcome of the Supreme Court. Now, the first agenda I'm setting for them is to see how they will work on the economy. That is very, very important. Then the unity of the country is paramount. We are heavily divided as a people. So what I expect the incoming administration to do is that they have to work on the economy to make sure that our economy comes back to what it used to be. Then we as a people have to be united, and I think it's an incumbent on the incoming administration to see that these things are achieved.
Okay, my name is Steve Daniels. I am a pharmacist. Well, the inauguration of Bola Ahmed Tinubu will take place on May 29th. Of course, the Constitution of Nigeria, the Nigerian Constitution provides for the swearing in to go ahead despite court cases challenging Tinubu's election as Nigerian president. Well, I wish to call on Tinubu to hit the ground running by tackling some of the challenges facing Nigeria, challenges such as in the areas of poverty alleviation, insecurity, quality health care, and also improvement in infrastructures, and also to ensure that all our refineries are repaired and made functional.
My name is Mr. Augustine Nwachukwu, a retired civil servant. My thought is that it will hold, because in Nigerian constitution there is nothing that stops president-elect from being inaugurated, since there is nothing like that in the constitution, so the inauguration will still go ahead. My expectation will be for them to unite the country, because the present government has brought some things that have disunited the nation, and I expect them to do more by reducing insecurity in the country, bringing down the inflation in the country, because the cost of living now in Nigeria is very high, and so many other things that we are expecting them that we turn the country around for good.
My name is Anicetus Ebian, the retired banker.
Yeah,
Nigeria is thinking of the usual inauguration of the new president and the other governors on May 29th. Really, a lot of people are believing that the thing will not hold, but I know Of course, the constitution supports it, whether they rig the election or not, the inauguration will hold. But on my expectation of the government, already the government have dragged, the present government has dragged Nigeria into a lot of debt. The present government has already messed up the economy by throwing the country into serious debts, foreign and international, I mean, and domestic debts. I don't expect that the new government is going to do any magic, especially granted the fact that our oil production have gone to an abysmal low. Perhaps they're going to increase taxes to be able to run the government. Otherwise, no matter what they do, they will end up borrowing again to run the economy until Nigeria will no longer be credible. So my expectation of them is business as usual as Nigeria has been, borrow. If they are prudent, good. Nigeria can come back. But if they are not, if they are going to borrow and also steal the same money the way the present government and past governments have done, then we are in total mess.
Yeah, my name is Benjamin Kamde. I'm a businessman living in Port Harcourt. On the issue of the May 29th handover of government, yes, my take is that constitutionally, so long as INEC has given him certificate of returns, he will act in that capacity until the court says otherwise. So that is my take on the May 29. Definitely, I expect that he should be sworn in and then expect whatever thing the courts will decide. Then on the expectations for the new administration, not much, because the new incoming government, if it is Tinubu of 2010, Tinubu used to be a very active and vibrant man. I know I experienced his governance in Lagos when he was the state governor. He's active and articulate. But Tinubu of today, to me, is very fragile and frail. He cannot be able to weather the constraints of governance in Nigeria right now. That energy is not there. So I wonder how the magic will come for him to succeed, given the rate of deterioration that the economy and every area of Nigerian development has deteriorated to. So he has a very big work at his hands, and I hope and pray that he gets good lieutenants that will work with him to achieve a goal for the country. Thank you.
Those were the views of some Nigerians on the inauguration of the new president. They spoke with reporter Mike Mbonyi in Port Harcourt and Lagos. Meanwhile, Nigeria's president, Muhammad Buhari, defended his political record on Sunday, the day before he steps down. According to the French news agency, the AFP, he said he leaves the country in better state than when he took power in 2015. On Monday, he'll hand over the reins of Africa's most populous nation to a new head of state, Bola Ahmed Tinubu, who was elected in February despite the opposition claiming massive electoral fraud. But the administration of 71-year-old Tinubu inherits a 14-year-old jihadist insurgency in the northeast, which has resulted in some 40,000 deaths, with 2 million more displaced. The AFP says under Buhari, the military recaptured territory that had been under the control of the jihadist group Boko Haram. But rivals linked to the Islamic State group ISWAP have since emerged as the dominant threat. A former general in the army, Buhari was elected in 2015 and again in 2019 on the promise of putting an end to corruption and insecurity in Nigeria. But according to many observers and analysts, Buhari leaves behind a very disappointing, if not catastrophic, legacy. Africa's leading economy is in the throes of a serious economic crisis, with double-digit inflation, exploding debt, poverty and unemployment, as well as a security crisis with rampant violence by both criminal and jihadist groups responsible for mass killings and kidnappings. South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa said last week Russian President Vladimir Putin and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky have agreed to separate meetings with a delegation of six African leaders to discuss a possible plan to peacefully resolve the Ukrainian war. It's not clear when those talks will take place. Ramaphosa said he would join other leaders taking part in the delegation, which includes Zambia, Senegal, Republic of Congo, Uganda, and Egypt. Ramaphosa's announcement occurred days after the U.S. ambassador accused South Africa of siding with Russia in the war in Ukraine. South Africa has claimed it's neutral. Sifo Mantula is an analyst with the Thabo Mbeki African School of Public and International Affairs. He says what the African leaders bring to the table is collective experience and knowledge on conflict resolution. In part one of their conversation, Mantula tells VOA's Carol Van Damme the neutrality of some of the African leaders could be helpful.
Both leaders coming from North Africa, East Africa, Central Africa, and West Africa, and the SADC region, they are both leaders who have, in their own right, have the relations with both Russia and Ukraine, despite that we know that most of these leaders are closely aligned to Russia. But we see Congo-Brazzaville being aligned to France. We also see Senegal being aligned to France. But Senegal also was the first, their president, Macky Sall, was the first to lead an AU mission to Russia when the war began. So if you look at this six-member delegation or six African leaders, what they will bring, I think they will try to bring an understanding of the impact of the conflict that it has on the African continent. And secondly, also to look at that this conflict must not also extend to what we can call another third world war, if one looks at the challenges that the globe is facing since this conflict erupted last year.
It's important you have said that the six leaders don't take sides. However, four of the six abstained in the UN vote on Russia for invading Ukraine in the first place. Is this delegation just playing into the hands of Putin?
One will assume that they are not. I think they are trying to look at how will they be able to manage this process, mostly that there's a Russia-Africa summit coming. South Africa is hosting the BRICS summit. So if one looks at the pending meetings, they might have to engage also post this mission that will be undertaken by these six leaders. And one assumes that maybe they will try to give Moscow an understanding of the impact of the war in terms of their socio-economic development. They will try to also explain their views on the voting patterns, as we have mentioned. Because remember, the voting patterns that happened at the UN General Assembly was also pushing military intervention rather than a constructive peace dialogue. Because most of these African countries, and particularly South Africa, is pushing what we called a constructive diplomacy of negotiation. So these leaders, one will assume that they will also exercise the mediation skills that we had of many founding leaders of the African continent coming from Nelson Mandela, Julius Nyerere, Haile Selassie, Kwame Nkrumah. Many leaders in the African continent have dealt with most of the global wars.
It was actually the UN vote last year was to condemn Russia, not to place sanctions on it, I should mention.
Correct.
And Zambia and Egypt voted in favor of the motion. When is this mission of the six African leaders led by Ramaphosa expected to take place? Could it happen as early as next week?
It can happen early June or mid-June. What has been coming out is that even from the presidency, they've been mum about this. One looks at that probably it's a confidential process for now, but one will assume that researchers, academics, the media will be privy of the information once they've undertaken both visits to Kyiv and to Moscow. But as you are aware, one will assume that they have kept this as a confidential process in terms of alerting us when will the mission be undertaken.
That was Sifuna Mantula, an analyst with South Africa's Thabo Mbeki African School of Public and International Affairs. He was speaking to my colleague Carl Van Damme by phone from Arusha, Tanzania. Two guards at Virunga National Park were killed on Sunday in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The park is designated as a United Nations Education and Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, World Heritage Site. In a statement on Sunday, the park said the two guards were shot and succumbed to their injuries in Nyamsengera, a section near the Edward River, which marks the frontier with Uganda. Earlier, I reached reporter Jafar Alkatante in Goma for details on the attack.
A convoy of rangers of the Virunga National Park was attacked in the park near the station of Rindi. And rebels shot them, and two of them were shot dead. Their bodies are in Goma, and some of them are also injured.
What rebels were involved? Do you know?
Virunga doesn't have any information on who was those militiamen, but that area is the FDLR area, because Rindi is in the middle of the Virunga National Park, and that area is occupied by FDLR since long time, I can say even 20 years. But we never know, you know, Eastern Congo has a lot of militia, and every militia can operate in a zone, and you can think it's another militia. But we still wait for Virunga investigation. If they can get tomorrow or the day after tomorrow the identification of who was those who attacked. But this is not a good sign, because just 10 days ago, there was another attack in Virunga National Park, some 50 kilometers north of where today's attack happened, and three rangers was also killed in that armed attack.
And the authorities, as you said, don't know yet who was responsible for this attack. But the last attack a few days ago was by which rebel group? Do we know?
ADF was pointing, but this attack is on a region where ADF is not involved, because ADF is in Lubero and Beni territories in North Kivu, but this attack was in the territory of Rutshuru.
Now, the authorities, are they trying to trace down who did this, or what's the situation?
There is not any information about the situation now, because that zone, as I said, is involved by presence of FDLR. And since the M23 war, army is like more concentrated in the position against M23. So Virunga National Park rangers are only involved in the security of that zone. So we will wait for a statement of Virunga to know what will be planned to follow or to track those who attacked the rangers.
Yeah, but the area is very unsafe as far as we know.
That area is unsafe since long time. It's one of the very dangerous areas in North Kivu. Because even many trucks, many cars leaving Goma and going to the city of North Kivu, like Beni and Butembo, are often attacked in that region, and many people have been kidnapped in that area. It's not a secure area since long time, but attacks on rangers, you know, rangers are also equipped by weapons, they are armed. When militia attacks on Renda, that means it's a planned attack, because they are not attacking, they didn't attack civilians, but also some women people like Renda. This means that enemies of the national park are now targeting rangers. If two groups of rangers can be attacked just in 10 days, that means the park is once again targeted by enemies. You know, the Virunga National Park had already lost the control of a major part of the park on the south part of this park because of M23. M23 is controlling many tourist areas. All guerrilla stations are occupied by M23. And if other groups attack other areas of the park, that means that all the park will be under rebel control, and it will be closed for tourists.
That was reporter Jafar Alkatante. He spoke with me from Goma. Official election results from Mauritania's ruling party has strengthened its parliamentary majority. The French news agency AFP says after the second round of voting on Saturday, the El Insaf, or Equite Party of President Mahmoud Ould Ghazouani, has secured a total of 107 seats in the 176-seat legislature, according to the results issued by the Independent National Electoral Commission. The Al Ansaf Party, which had 93 seats in the outgoing National Assembly, took 80 seats in the first round vote on May 13th and a further 27 out of 36 seats at stake on Saturday. El Ansaf will also be able to count on the support of 42 deputies from allied parties, leaving the opposition with only 27 seats. All the candidates in the fray on Saturday were from constituencies outside the capital, Nouakchott. Opposition figures have called for a rerun of the first round, citing what they call electoral fraud and other problems. Ghazouani, a 66-year-old former army chief, is considered one of the main architects of Mauritania's success against jihadism in the violent Sahel region. Ghazouani has not officially announced his candidacy for a second term in 2024, but observers are in no doubt that he will stand for re-election. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today's Monday, May 29th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley with sports. It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, Douglas. We begin the sport in Morocco, where Africa made an impressive showing at the Wanda Diamond League meeting on Sunday in Rabat, as world and Olympic champion Soufiane El Bakkali of Morocco won the steeplechase race in the personal best of 7 minutes 56.68 seconds. It was a world-leading mark and meeting record, feats that were also achieved by Ethiopia's Gudaf Sagay, who won the 1,500 meters in 3 minutes 54.03 seconds to lead an Ethiopian 1-2-3-4 finish, with Freywine Haliu claiming second in 3 minutes 57.65 seconds, just 0.01 seconds ahead of BK Halum and Waknish Mesele, who was fourth in 4 minutes 01.81 seconds. Sege, after the race, said she is in great shape and injury free.
This one is my first competition this outdoor season. But I'm happy. Maybe problem is, I think first lap is easy for pacemaker. Yeah, maybe that one problem, but I'm happy my first race this one. No problem.
In other races, Kipkino Classic 800 meters champion Emmanuel Wanyoyi of Kenya destroyed a fine field to retain the men's 800 meters title to win in 1 minute and 44.36 seconds, while world 100 meters champion Fred Keeley from United States of America affirmed his status, beating Commonwealth champion Kenya's Ferdinand Omanyala to win the 100 meters at the Rabat Diamond League on Sunday. And now to basketball. Egyptian giant Al Hakli were crowned champions of the third season of the Basketball African League, following Saturday's 80-65 comfortable victory over Senegal's AS Douanes in the final held at the sold-out BK Arena. The playoffs of the BAL and NBA-backed showpiece brought together 8 teams from 8 different African countries. Al Hakli superstar Ihab Amin said the win for the Egyptian side was well-deserved.
Means everything. I mean, we've been working for this not only this year, for a couple of years now. We made this team for this moment. We got a lot of Egyptian local players that were really good, a lot of national team players that can play together. Obviously, the imports are outstanding. Corey Webster, Nooney, the MVP, Michael Fakwadi, and, of course, Michael Thompson. They got they got with us and bought in, and I think that's what differentiates us from other teams. You know, we play all together.
In football news, the Flying Eagles of Nigeria suffered their first defeat at the 2023 FIFA Under 20 World Cup on Saturday after losing 2-0 to five-time champions Brazil in La Plata. And that's it on this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Douglas, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. On behalf of the entire Daybreak Africa crew,